This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
We're about to step into one of the most significant weekends on the Christian calendar. Do you think people in modern Australia still understand the spiritual significance of Easter, though?
I think that's a very interesting question. And I think for some Australians, this is, in fact, the high point of the religious year. It's a time for reflecting on what Christ has done in his death and then in his resurrection, which is celebrated on Sunday. But even among Christians, it's Protestants and Catholics who celebrate this weekend and the Eastern churches, including the Orthodox churches, who celebrate a little bit later. So the calendar thing, you know, is diverse even among Christians. And then for people, I think, more widely, it's still appreciated definitely as a holiday. I think this year with people at home, perhaps it's a more reflective time than a getaway, a camping trip or something like that. And I think the whole idea of renewal, of life that somehow transcends the difficulties, the challenges, the sickness that we grapple with all the time, I think that still has great meaning for people. But whether that's something they connect to the story of Jesus is, well, sometimes people do and sometimes people don't.
It's a little bit different from Christmas too, because to me, Christmas feels like a louder occasion. There's a lot more celebration, family, there's gifts, of course, whereas Easter almost carries an inherent level of sort of sadness. There's grief, but then there's also huge joy in there too. So the way that it affects each of us, it kind of has a different emotion. It sort of invokes a different emotional response perhaps as well.
I think maybe one of the things that's gone on here is that Christmas has become associated with just one day, the 25th of December, even though in the history of church liturgies, there's a whole season. There's Advent, of course, and then the Christmas season that goes on for several days, even weeks after the 25th. But Easter still kind of at least Holy Week from Palm Sunday through this time to Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, and then Easter Sunday. It's almost still a real-time festival, which has that emotional roller coaster from praise and celebration through to devastation, to grief, to hopelessness, to a radical and unexpected hope. And I think for people who do sit with that in real time, it feels like going through the ringer in some ways, but that's part of the power of slowing down and being a bit more contemplative.
And this year, of course, we're being forced to slow down in an even greater way. So those ideas of sacrifice, renewal, resurrection, maybe they're going to land with people a little bit differently. What do you think the modern relevance of those themes and the truth of Easter really is now?
With the coronavirus pandemic that's sweeping through the world at the moment, I think the fragility and the contingency of our lives as humans is, I guess, being put in front of us in some really shocking and unsettling ways, that we aren't the captains of our own souls. We don't control our environment, that something is, you know, we can't even see a virus, and yet it's upending so much of what we considered to be normal and perhaps even permanent. In that space, a lot of people will be thinking about those bigger questions. I mean, for Jewish people, we've just observed Passover. Next month, as in 2 weeks' time, Ramadan begins for Muslims. I think people who are connected to one of those major faith traditions have lots of resources and structures for kind of grappling with this. But for other people too, a lot of people have a spirituality that doesn't match up with a particular church or denomination. And I think, even just what I'm seeing on social media, that we all feel the limits of our humanity sometimes, and the need for a humanity that somehow isn't limited by death, but somehow a need for hope that goes beyond our physical weaknesses, that goes beyond our lack of control. I think a lot of people will have those things on their minds. And for those who do turn to the Easter narratives laid out in the Gospels, there'll be plenty to reflect on there and perhaps something that can speak into this moment.
We'll certainly have a lot more time to investigate it, that's for sure. And thinking historically of Easter's role in the Australian culture, on our calendar, it's very unlikely that Indigenous Australians marked the occasion. So when did Easter become something that we do celebrate in this country? And do we know much about when the first Easter services may have been held?
Well, it's interesting you ask me that. I've been thinking about this actually for years, because part of researching my book, which is a cultural history of the Bible in Australia, I wanted to know, when did the stories of the Bible and when did the Bible even as an object get introduced to the place we now call Australia? And I think that obviously it was the colonists who arrived at what they called Sydney Cove in 1788 who brought the first hard copy Bibles, the chaplain Richard Johnson who brought a cargo of them to distribute to the convicts and to support his ministry to the early colony. But before him, I think some of the European explorers who are making their way into the South Pacific for the first time would have had Bibles with them, including James Cook, who arrived. Well, he didn't arrive. He wasn't planning to come to New South Wales. He stopped over, really. He just stopped over at Botany Bay for 8 days in 1770. And that was in April. And I looked it up. Easter that year was about a week before he arrived.
Wow.
And his job, part of his job as the commanding officer on board the Endeavour, when there's no chaplain, is to read the service, the Church of England service himself.
Mm.
And so he very probably had a prayer book. He had a Bible that's still with the State Library in Sydney, the State Library of New South Wales has the Bible that's come down through his widow and his family to the State Library that apparently was the one he took on the Endeavour voyages.
Yeah.
And when you look at his journals, he doesn't say very often that he did hold the Sunday service for the crew, but he does mention it sometimes, and Joseph Banks describes him doing it when Cook didn't make a note of that. So we know he did it without writing it down. And assuming that he did do what he was meant to be doing, leading the service for the crew every Sunday, so there's a lot of histories like this. It's like a bit of a needle in a haystack,
yeah,
kind of see what you can piece together. There are always parts of the puzzle that you don't have, but you can learn about the time and kind of try and work it out. I think it was a Sunday that he came ashore at Botany Bay, and it was the second Sunday after Easter. So if you look back to the prayer book that he presumably read from, the collect for the day talks about Christ dying for our sins and being an example of godly life for all the those who follow him. And the reading was from John's Gospel about the good shepherd and the sheep. These are the kinds of passages that would have presumably been read by Cook to the rest of the crew.
Wow.
And what's fascinating to me, like, did he hold a service on board before he came ashore? His journals don't say he did, but it's possible, and it's, I think, likely. The thing is, though, they come ashore and the Gweigal, the traditional owners, or the inhabitants of what's now Kurnell Peninsula, didn't want these strangers to come ashore on their land. And there's a kind of an interaction that at that point ends when Cook draws out his musket. For me, in microcosm, there we have the introduction, perhaps, or at least a fragment of the Christian story being read and observed in Australia, and the violence of British colonialism all on one morning, on Sunday, the 27th of April, 1770. And I think that raises all kinds of questions. Well, what is the story of Christianity here? What do we do with the cultural and political and sometimes violent things that have gone along with that? What did Cook think if he'd just read those prayers and then acted in that way? Is the problem that Christianity hasn't had much relevance here? Is the problem that the people who brought it weren't Christian enough? There's or something else? Or do we need to be listening now to Indigenous Christians who can reinterpret and re-understand the story of Jesus and his death and resurrection in a way that isn't bound up with dispossession or with the kind of violence that Cook enacted? What does resurrection and a new community and a new kingdom that's not captive to death really look like in a place like Australia?
And it's something that you could continue to just dig deeper into and ask even bigger questions around it, because as you say, you're not likely to find some real concrete answers historically to some of those things. So your imagination and your own curiosity can really guide you. And we know on this Easter Sunday, you're going to be part of a pretty, I'm intrigued to watch show with Compass, looking at some of the ideas of sacrifice and stories around that, particularly those coming up on Anzac Day as well. What is the connection that you're drawing between Easter and Anzac Day with that idea of sacrifice?
Well, I mean, this is another really, I think, area where the Christian story and the story of Australian society and culture really rub up against each other. So when Australians went to World War One, or they called it the Great War, they thought it was the war to end all wars, they often reached for the language of sacrifice to make sense of why they were doing that. So I've read the diaries of young evangelicals who enlisted for service who would say things like, I couldn't bear to stay at home when I knew others were out fighting for me. I should give up my life as others have given up their lives for me.
Mm.
And clearly drawing on an example of Jesus as someone who put his own wants aside in service of others. And after the war, and you can see this actually at the War Memorial down in Melbourne, that phrase from Jesus, greater love hath no man than this, than he give his life for his friends, from John's Gospel, chapter 15. That phrase, which Jesus used to talk about his own impending death for others, was often taken as a phrase applied to soldiers to talk about their deaths. At the same time, there were people, even in 1915, as the Anzacs were landing at Gallipoli, preachers in Australia, not very many of them, but some of them who said, you know what, the sacrifice of Christ is not the same thing as the sacrifice of a soldier on a battlefield, because he gave himself up for others, whereas soldiers are required to take life as well as to give their own lives.
Mm.
And there's, I mean, one preacher that I talk about in the TV show on Compass was a Methodist out in Hay in the Riverina of New South Wales who called it a blasphemy to talk about soldiers in that same language. And so the debate about themes of sacrifice are so important in our culture, whether it's Anzacs, whether it's lifesavers, whether it's bushfire fighters, whether it's nurses and doctors now on the front lines in our hospitals. So many people give of themselves for the good of our community. And we're right to reach for the language of sacrifice, I think, to understand that. But sometimes it's in step with a Christian understanding of that, but sometimes it's out of step with a Christian understanding of that. And that we don't want to be too careless or blur the boundaries, because understanding that and actually dwelling with that, I think, can give us fresh eyes for where we are now and how we might live together as a community.
And understanding those ideas of sacrifice or love, whatever it might be, as virtues and sort of character qualities, maybe as well, just independently of the Christian faith as well. Like, then there's a whole other set of questions you can ask. But I do like as well that you say that that phrase that we associate with Anzac Day of lest we forget, that's also very connected to the Christian faith and Easter and the sacrifice of Christ, in saying that's also something that we don't want to forget and should be remembered at this time too.
Well, it's funny because that phrase, lest we forget, which is very common on our war memorials, as everybody knows, and that comes from a poem by Rudyard Kipling, who was the main poet in Britain at the time of Queen Victoria. And when she'd been on the throne, for decades and decades, he wrote a poem about, lest we forget, to mark her jubilee. But he took it from the book of Deuteronomy, where there's a passage that talks about, do not forget the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, who rescued you from slavery. Don't forget him. And it's a warning in the scriptural context to remember the salvation of God and to be humbled by that. And Rudyard Kipling, he was not a Christian poet, but he was familiar with that story and then writes his own poem about lest we forget, to kind of warn the British Empire at the time he was writing, don't forget, empires rise and fall, that their political power doesn't last forever. And there was a kind of circumspection to his poem. And then that phrase gets taken, from the Bible via his poem into war remembrance to become a phrase saying, lest we forget the sacrifice of those who served, and especially those who were wounded or died. And so for me, it's an example of how a biblical phrase and a biblical story kind of moves through culture with great meaning. Sometimes it keeps its theological baggage, and sometimes that theological baggage gets left behind. And so it's an example of how we've secularized on one hand, but an example of how we still draw on biblical phrases, ideas, stories to make sense of huge things like the loss of 60,000 Australians in World War One.
Yeah, it makes you realise just how much of our history we may not really be across or know quite as thoroughly as we thought. But Meredith, I can tell that the show on Sunday night is just going to make us ask so many more questions. But as it does come on Easter weekend, are you going to do anything special to mark the occasion or somehow make it feel at least a little bit normal?
Well, I'm thinking about this just at the moment. We'll zoom into our regular church service, I think, on Sunday morning. Probably try and organise some kind of Easter egg hunt in the backyard for the kids who've been cooped up for weeks. And I guess I probably will watch the show. I haven't really been on TV before or hosted a show before, so I am very curious about how it's all turned out.
Hopefully good.
Yeah, it will be an unusual Easter, but I think that idea that death is not the winner, that the kingdom of Christ pushes through death to something richer and more eternal, I'll spend some time thinking about that too.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.